Welcome to Locked On Heat. On today's show, we'll talk about how the NBA draft lottery results could impact the Heat.
Then we'll answer some of your mailbag questions, including what the Heat can learn from the success of the Celtics and Cavaliers. Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for The Step Back. I write for Miami Heat's Tip-Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanEat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided. You can follow me in my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
It's been a while since we opened up the mailbag. We've got a bunch of questions that we have to get to. Probably going to have to make this a two-parter, David, but let's start with the NBA draft lottery that happened on Tuesday night. We learned that the Phoenix Suns will have the first pick in the draft, and now the Heat don't have a pick in this draft since their pick, which would have been at number 16, that'll convey to Phoenix thanks to that Goran Dragic trade from a few years ago. But I got a take that I need to get off, David. I think the Suns getting the number one pick could help the Heat.
Okay. That sounds like it needs a little bit more of an explanation. How does that help Miami?
So, with Phoenix having their pick of the litter, essentially, of who they want to get. Now, there's a lot of speculation. This is kind of a two-person draft, right? From everybody that, you know, you and I are on an email thread with quite a few people who watch, you know, college basketball and think about the NBA draft, you know, all season long a little bit more closely than you and I do.
Right.
And it seems to be a two-person draft, right? It's DeAndre Ayton and it's Luka Doncic. And those are your two guys. And after that, there's a bunch of good players still, but those are the top two elite players.
Mm-hmm.
Phoenix is going to have their pick of both of them. And I do think that they're going to end up going with Luka Doncic, not only because Igor Kokoskov coached him overseas, but he's like a Ben Simmons type guy. And I just, with the way that the NBA is going, I think those guys are a little bit more valuable in today's game than your traditional big, which DeAndre Ayton is a versatile big, but he's still, you know, at the end of the day, he's a 7-footer. I think those perimeter guys who can handle the ball are just a little bit more valuable right now. I think they're going to go with Doncic, and if that's the case, if Kokoskov is trying to, you know, maybe build a similar version to the Eurobasket gold medal team in the NBA, they could be even more willing to reunite Doncic with Goran Dragic in Phoenix. And if that's the case, look, Miami's not going to trade Dragic for the number one pick in the draft, obviously, but Phoenix has got a bunch of picks, including Miami's pick at 16. They've got a bunch of future picks, and they got a lot of young players and assets that they can move. With them getting the number one pick and possibly taking Doncic there, I think it increases the possibility that they would want to also bring in Goran Dragic. What do you think?
Look, it makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, it's just maybe a little too neat the way it all works out, because obviously Dragic has a good place there in Phoenix. He's familiar with the system. He's familiar with the team in the front office. He played there for a number of years. I talked to some people. They said that maybe he had burned the bridges a little too thoroughly on his way out, so they wouldn't take him. But I talked to others, and they said that he would be welcome back. I think that he had done enough to make amends with team owner Robert Sarver, and that as a result, he could facilitate a trade could be worked out, I think. On the flip side of that, as far as his overall fit there, they've obviously got a much younger core now. You're unloading Tyson Chandler, perhaps. You know, he's obviously a little bit too old and not nearly as effective as he once was. And if you bring in a guy like Dragic, who's going to be 32, you know, is he going to develop, or is he going to help those other guys develop at the same pace that they might need to? Is he going to, you know, perhaps impede some of their growth and development? And then there's also the feeling that if you've got Booker there, you got Doncic, and you get Dragic, where does that leave Josh Jackson? Is he going to be an ideal candidate for the four? Perhaps not yet. He's a little undersized. So even though some people think he might be able to play there eventually, what do you do with him? Does he come off the bench? Are you going to stagnate his growth? Does Doncic come off the bench? I don't think you can invest the first round pick in somebody and have him develop that slowly, even in today's league. So it's a curious situation. I mean, again, Dragic does seem to make sense, but in other ways, maybe he might be kind of limiting what they do there in Phoenix.
I mean, maybe they could start Dragic, Booker, Jackson, and Doncic some way or other. You know, you're playing either Jackson or Doncic at the stretch four type position. And yeah, they haven't answered center, whether it be Dragon Bender or Marcus Chris, or you continue to bring those guys off the bench and find another center. Otherwise, I don't know. I think there's some options there. But I do think that the draft lottery, again, the Heat don't have a pick, but the way that it kind of fell, there is some impact on what Miami could possibly do this summer. I mean, let's look at Sacramento, who was also in they jumped up into the top two, right?
Yep.
And then by them having the second pick, you know, if the Suns take Doncic at one, they will likely take DeAndre Ayton at two, but who knows? Sacramento could always screw it up somehow. But they'll probably likely take Ayton at two, right? And if that's the case, that likely eliminates them as a landing spot for Hassan Whiteside, right? And I've speculated in the past that I think they'd be willing to take Whiteside back, but if they get Ayton, there's no need to have Whiteside. So that's interesting. And then Dallas, they fell all the way down to six, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And
no, six is Orlando. I think they're fifth.
Oh, so they're fifth. You're right. If that's, you know, there's like four or five big men in this draft, and it depends on who they like. But we've talked about Dallas in the past as a possible Whiteside landing spot. Does Dallas instead opt to take at five one of the top, because they're going to get one of the top four bigs, right, in this draft, or they're going to, one of those top four bigs will be available to them. So if it's the guy that they like, that could eliminate them as a Whiteside landing spot as well.
Yeah, it's just who's the best fit for a Dallas roster that's going to be undergoing some transformation? They've got Harrison Barnes there. Can they unload his contract? I'm saying maybe they'll look to move Harrison Barnes in a trade for Hassan Whiteside. You've theorized that they'd include Wesley Matthews, but they might be willing to include Harrison Barnes too. Not that he necessarily has a good fit here. It might be a better as a three-way trade scenario. So I'm not sure exactly how Hassan fits in the Dallas Mavericks.
I think the Heat would take Harrison Barnes, but I don't think that the Mavericks would trade Barnes for Whiteside. I talked to somebody that is around that covers Dallas, and I actually floated that idea to him, and he's like, look, Harrison Barnes was like the one free agent that Mark Cuban and that front office were able to land, and it's just like, I don't think that they'd give up on him for Whiteside. That said, like, yeah, Wesley Matthews makes sense. They're going to have some cap room. Could they just trade, you know, a current center that they have, like Dwight Powell, who's making about less than half of what Whiteside is making? They have the cap space to just take on Whiteside's salary and then give up a lot less in return. And Miami then could, you know, use that cap space to re-sign Wayne Ellington or something like that. But I do think, like, Dallas, I'm with you. I don't even know if drafting a big man this high, if it's not the guy that they want, makes sense for them. There's a couple of different wings that they could take in this area. You know, you look at a guy like Michael Porter Jr., Mikal Bridges out of Villanova. You know, these guys who could play the perimeter a little bit and space the floor for Dennis Smith Jr. Could be a nice fit there. Chicago, they landed at seven. And that's going to be an interesting spot for them, because I think Whiteside could still be in play. Because if you're, you know, the top four bigs, right, that we're talking about, Ayton, Mo Bamba, Jaren Jackson Jr., and I'm forgetting somebody else. But Marvin Bagley III. Those are kind of the top four guys. And then you've got you got Bagley's teammate, Wendell Carter Jr., kind of there in the, you know, maybe around the 8, 9, 10, 11 range, according to a lot of these mock drafts that I'm looking at. Chicago's picking a little bit higher than that at 7, so it might be a reach for Wendell Carter. They could go for a wing, and then that could still keep them in play for a possible Whiteside trade, right? Like, they could still move maybe a Paul Zipser and a Robin Lopez package together for Whiteside or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility. Would they be willing to take one of the wing players there, or still draft a big if they were able to acquire Whiteside?
I think that they're kind of in play for a wing, right? That's right where we're looking at the two Bridges could possibly be in play there. Miles Bridges out of Michigan State could be a really good fit, you know, next to Lauri Markkanen. You know, if they don't want to invest a top draft pick in another 7-footer because they've got Lauri Markkanen there, who's a stretch four, right? But they've played him a little bit at the five, and it depends on what they're looking at to do with him in the future. Do you want to invest a top draft pick and maybe have to reach a little bit for a Wendell Carter like that? Mm-hmm. Or do you go ahead and take a wing? Do you take a point guard? A Colin Sexton or a Trey Young there. I think that the perimeter options where the Bulls are picking are going to be a little bit stronger than the remaining bigs that are left. And if that's the case, they could, again, be in play for Whiteside still. Mm. So really, so far, the only teams that have been eliminated, I think, from the Whiteside sweepstakes, not a sweepstakes you necessarily want to win, but has been kind of Sacramento in a way, and we're not even sure that's the case. But I did want to also talk about the 14th pick in the draft, and that's the Denver Nuggets, who haven't been necessarily smart with the 14th pick in the draft, or the 13th pick in the draft. But I don't know that...
The Donovan Mitchell debacle?
That's what I was talking about, yeah. But so they might... decide that they want to trade out of this pick again, at the end of the lottery. I don't know that if you're Denver, right? I don't know that picking in the lottery makes sense for you. They're only picking in the lottery. They made a strong push for the playoffs at the end of the season. They failed to make it. They strike me as a team that could trade this pick for a veteran player who can play right now. Now, there's going to be some point guards that are on the board right now. I think they're in the market for a point guard who could sort of stabilize the offense, allow Jamal Murray to play off ball a little bit more often. And that seems to be what they're looking for. Again, there's going to be maybe one or two point guards that are in the mix here. But if they prefer to develop Murray, develop guys like Gary Harris, and then maybe get and trade this pick for a veteran who they don't have to coach up as much and who could just step in and play right away and maybe help them get to the playoffs, which is their goal. Does Goran Dragic here make sense? Does a swap for 14, the number 14 pick in the draft for Dragic straight up make sense? Because I got to tell you, I don't think it does, but it's worth asking.
Yeah, I don't see it either, though, to be honest with you. I mean, I think they're committed to Murray at the point and Harris at the two guards. So where does that leave Goran Dragic? I mean, is he a bench player for them? I wouldn't think so either, considering what he can do.
Harris off the bench as an Eric Gordon super six man?
I think
they're going to be losing Will Barton.
But at the same time, it would also feel like there might be stunting his development a little bit. Mm. I mean, I think... Well, it depends on what they do with Will Barton. He was a part-time starter for them, but he came off the bench as well as a super six man. They didn't have much punch off the bench, though, did they? Right. They could probably use somebody like Harris coming off the bench. He provides a lot of floor spacing and some versatility there. So he'd be a nice fit off the bench. It all depends on obviously he's a free agent. So Will Barton is.
Yeah, Will Barton's a free agent. So I think. Look, I think the fit makes sense. I think Dragic and Denver makes sense again. It sounds like they want to play Murray off the ball and play him on the ball. And I think Dragic being there, like we've seen Dragic coexist with guards in the past in that backcourt. I think that the combination of him and Murray makes sense for a short term, But like, I just don't know that Dragic by himself is enough to land, what is essentially a lottery pick. Yeah. And I don't know that even, and on the flip side, I don't know that Miami would be willing to give up an all-star point guard for the 14th pick in the draft. They just picked at 14. They got Bam Adebayo. He's panned out nicely in his first year, but I don't know that they're willing to move a guy like Dragic for that 14th pick, because we heard Pat Riley say in the press conference he would rather have Dragic than the two draft picks, and 14 isn't that much higher than 16, which is where Miami would be picking in the first place. So I don't think that they'd move him, but I wonder if either side could sweeten the deal, or if maybe there's a three-way trade here, maybe that could be worked out. But it wouldn't surprise me if the call was made, one way or the other. The fit makes sense. I just don't know that the value makes sense. You know what I mean?
I mean, there are options. I mean, there's even Orlando is looking to make some changes there to their roster. They've got a lot of bloated contracts. I mean, New York, can we count on that front office there not to be not to blow this, as they have in the past? Charlotte's been a frequent trade partner.
Charlotte at 11 is an interesting team. Yeah.
Yeah. They've got some, they've got some relationships there. Mitch Kupchak obviously knows Pat Riley very well. So I figure that's a possibility.
I think the Clippers have two picks at 12 and 13.
They do.
Milos Teodosic, injury plagued first year in the NBA. Older point guard, does not look like a long-term answer or even a short-term answer there at point guard. That experiment did not necessarily work. Lou Williams is their starting he wasn't their starting point guard because I think they rigged it so that he can win six man, but he's not a starting point guard. He's a six man. I mean, Drake wrote about it, but it was Goran Dragic, maybe for, you know, throw some other things in there, but a framework for one of those two first-round picks. Do the Clippers want to maybe get a veteran point guard if they're able to, you know, retain DeAndre Jordan? I don't know what the Clippers are. It depends on what the Clippers are trying to do. Are they looking to build long-term and maybe just completely rebuild this thing? Or do we believe what they were sort of saying, which was after the Blake Griffin trade, this isn't a rebuild. This is just sort of a reshuffling. Yeah. Does Doc Rivers stay there? I mean, there's a lot of questions, but if they decide that they want to try to win and get out of the lottery in the short term, trading one of those two picks for Dragic, you know, and throw in some other things there could make some sense for the Clippers. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of options.
All right. Well, let's get to this mailbag. I want to talk about what the Heat can learn from the two teams currently in the Eastern Conference Finals after this quick break. So let's go to this email from M.M., who writes in, food for thought. Boston, Eastern Conference Finals. 6 first-round picks. Cleveland, Eastern Conference Finals. Major superstar. This is clearly the formula for success. Get a superstar, which we haven't been able to do, so stop trading away draft picks and tank. We could have had Donovan Mitchell. David, I included this mailbag question to frustrate you a little bit because I said the T word, but also, does our emailer have a point here?
I mean, yes. I also think that it's acquiring a superstar isn't as easy as it sounds. You know, that sounds like a great plan. I'm sure 30 teams would love to have a quote-unquote superstar. But it also depends. All those draft picks, as great as they're playing, what makes Boston so good is that they are more than just the sum of their parts. I think if you take away, as good as Jaylen Brown has been in the postseason, if you take him away and put him on another team, he might not necessarily look as good. I think you can make that same case for guys like Marcus Smart, who are obviously limited. You know, Tatum, that was an aberration that I don't think anybody expected. Nobody thought that he'd be the kind of superstar type talent that we're seeing, even if he was going to be a top 3 pick or not.
You mean like right away?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was something, you know, something that would take years to develop. I mean, he's only, what is he, 20 years old though?
He's only 20. And so, say it on every freaking broadcast. Yeah. Yes, Brown, I think, is 22. Yeah. Okay, 20 as well, not 22.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're unbelievably young, and they're reaching this potential very quickly, a lot quicker than a lot of people expected. I think we were this close to getting Gordon Hayward, and if that's the case, then it changes how Miami builds their team, and I think that they're going to continue to put themselves in a position to acquire a superstar in the future. I think they were close to getting Kevin Durant a couple years ago. Even if they were just one of 5 teams, it's more than 25 other teams had a chance at. So that's still the model. That's still the preferred model. I personally don't think that tanking is the right way to go about it. I think everybody forgets the misery of a tanking season. You know, we forget how bad they were when they were 11-30 because they were so damn good when they were 30-11. But you go back years before the Big Three, before those 2 years where Dwayne Wade was playing at an MVP level and the team went, was it 15-67? Mm-hmm. And they wound up with Michael Beasley. I mean, come on. Is this what you want to tank for, Michael Beasley? As great as Bees is on occasion, as much fun as we love with a personality like Beasley, he is not the kind of foundational player you can build your team around. You know, you're just as likely at this point in time getting a player who might have been in college for 2 years, 3 years, instead of just the one, and seeing if you can develop him that way, the way that they have with Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, etc. I mean, there are a number of players on this team that weren't drafted even. You know, Rodney McGrew.
But they're not superstars. They're fringe role players or rotation guys. But Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, I love both of those guys. Bam Adebayo, I think, has a very bright future. But none of those guys are the superstar, which is what we're talking about. They're not going to be.
Maybe not. But who on Boston is going to be a superstar? Is it Tatum?
Jason Tatum, yeah.
You think so? I mean, that's potential.
Yeah, totally.
We don't know.
But let's talk about Boston a little bit, right? Because they signed Al Horford. They signed Gordon Hayward. They traded assets that they had for Kyrie Irving. They weren't supposed to be built on Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And look, give the Celtics and Brad Stevens all the credit we want, but they still weren't built around Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. So to your point, they still needed, or at least thought they needed, and eventually to win the title, they're going to need guys like Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, and Al Horford has been their best player in the playoffs. We talk all about Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum because they're really more surprising. Al Horford has just been grinding away as he has for his entire career, just like this. But he's been one of the best, I don't know, four or five players in the postseason so far. I mean, he's been unbelievable. So, you know, having those guys helps. Hitting on the right free agents helps. And I just don't know, quite frankly, that Miami has done that. You know, like, you look at what they traded future assets for Goran Dragic. I don't have a problem with Dragic, but Boston traded future assets, and their assets were more valuable, but they ended up getting Kyrie Irving, who was an MVP candidate before he got hurt, right? They got Gordon Hayward. Miami did not. Like, they have struck out on a few moves, and I'm with you. We disagree on tanking as a premise. I am more pro-tanking than you are. I actually think that the Heat, I go back and forth on this, but they might be better off tanking this next season. And maybe trying to reload and reshuffle, and I'm okay with. I think I could deal with one tanking season, and I'm not sure every fan can, but in general the Heat aren't going to do that. We know that. We know Pat Riley isn't going to do that. So they're going to go the free agent route. They need to figure out a way, or they're going to go the trade route, and they need to figure out a way to maneuver those things. And that's really at the end of the day what they're going to do. But if you look at the way the Cavaliers and the Celtics are built, they're not just built with draft picks. They were built with Cleveland was built on the trade market. Cleveland has been a team for the last 4 years that was built at the trade deadline. Boston is a team that was built not only with Billy King's draft picks, but also with really good free agent acquisitions and kind of doing the same thing that the Heat do and getting role players to perform better than what other teams were able to get out of them. And I think that there's a framework there for Miami. I just think that they need to reshuffle a little bit more. You know, I'm not sure that the guys they have right now have much of a higher ceiling. I think they just need to rework it a little bit.
I think that's the plan, though. The plan is to package two or three of these mid-level guys in the hope of translating that into a number one type player. And whether that it's not going to be somebody at the level of a LeBron James, obviously, but it's somebody else who might be able to help this team and put them over the hump the way that Miami needed somebody to do so against Philadelphia. That was where they were lacking something the most, I think. And they got, you know, there was the underperformance of Hassan Whiteside to consider as well. But, you know, you talk about Tatum, he wouldn't even have played if Gordon Hayward had stayed healthy, right? Can we agree on that?
I mean, he would have played, but he wouldn't. I agree. Like, he wouldn't have been the number one scoring option.
And to think about Donovan Mitchell, yeah, he was one pick away from being a Miami-type player.
God, we called that, man. We were so ahead of that, and nobody gives us credit. I feel like we need a mailbag that's just full of people praising us for nailing the Donovan Mitchell pick.
I did like his potential. We both did. Yeah. I mean, it was...
Nailed that one.
It was really upsetting. I remember my palms, you know, obviously I'm not much of a draft person, but my palms were actually sweating in anticipation of landing Donovan Mitchell.
When Detroit took Luke Kennard. Yes. It was like when Detroit...
Stan Van Gundy.
It was like when Detroit took Stanley Johnson, and we're like, we're getting Justice Winslow!
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he took Luke Kennard, we're like, we're getting Donovan Mitchell. And then the stupid Denver Nuggets. Man, the Heat fan base should hate the Denver Nuggets more than it does. I feel like Team Petty is all over Cleveland and all over Boston. Team Petty never talks about Denver. They need to get on that and email us praise, like unending praise.
And rip on Trey Lyles for some reason, because he was the one that helped swing that deal in Denver's favor. But anyway, Donovan Mitchell, he wouldn't even have been playing if not for Dante Exum getting hurt. I mean,
these are the kind of things he would have forced his way, I think. But yeah, look, you got to consider, like, I agree. But you got to have these picks, and you've got to have these picks to hit. Like, I talk about the 76ers all the time. They went 50-50 with the guys they picked. Like, Nerlens Noel and Jahlil Okafor didn't work. But guess what? They had a bunch of picks. So they were able to get Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. It worked for them. All you have to do... You know, if you're a Philadelphia and you're committed to it, you only have to hit about half of them. And you know, they ended up getting two superstars. If they didn't even have Joel Embiid, you could be looking at Philadelphia with just Ben Simmons alone and be like, wow, they still have a really bright future. But again, I just, as far as the Heat tanking, it's too late for them. They've already, they have yet to convey, well, they're too good. Their salary books are a little bit too loaded, and so they'd have to part with draft picks, right? Because the draft is all about just getting as many shots as you can. Miami's done a nice job here and there with the few picks that they have had of really nailing them. Like Justice Winslow, I thought was a good pick.
And will be.
Josh Richardson, Bam Adebayo. Those were good picks. Like, the Heat do a good job with the draft picks that they have. They just haven't been picking so high that they can land a superstar. And I think if they had a top five pick, they would make the right pick. But they just the two picks that they traded for Dragic have yet to convey. One will go this summer, but they have also got a future first round of the Toad. They have no second rounders until 2021. And they've got too many bloated salaries, so they can't do the Brooklyn Nets thing, right? Where you take big salaries in return to restock draft picks. And the only way to get rid of these salaries is to pair either young players who they would technically be rebuilding with, or the draft picks that they don't have. You have to add those to get rid of their big contracts. So it's too late for the Heat to tank. Like, tanking is just, it wouldn't be real. The only way to tank would be for 1 year. You tank for one season, 2019, when they have their pick next year. As of now, they haven't traded it yet. That would be the only way to tank. It would be a very short-term thing, and I think you would only do it if you did it right. And you would have to do it like so. They would have to tank so badly, like they would win 10 games and almost do like what the Phoenix Suns did and just completely crap the bed on the season and just openly tank. Because if you do it, they've only got one chance at it, and they'd have to get the number one pick. And I just don't see that happening. But we mentioned Winslow a little bit and Bam at a little bit. Let's talk about the kind of improvements that they can make next season. We'll talk about that after this quick break. Back with Locked On Heat, let's keep answering some of these mailbag questions. Steven asks, guys, I'd be interested in hearing what improvements Bam and Justice could make next year. Justice's performance in the playoffs was very promising, and Bam has all the tools to be a very good piece for this team going forward. What are the reasonable expectations? David, we haven't gotten to our exit interviews for either Justice or Bam yet, and we don't want to spoil them, so let's dip our toes in. Give me a headline. What does Justice Winslow need to do this summer?
I think
we'll start with him.
Continuing to build on what we saw in the playoffs. Like, he found a good groove there that he had never found over the course of his first 3 years. Obviously, missed a lot of time due to injury in his second season, but now that he's there, now that he understands what his role is, what he's capable of, maintaining that, continue to develop. For him, versatility is the key, but he also has some elite-level athleticism and explosion, and I think he just needs to be able to be a little bit more consistent and continue to develop those. So that's what I think out of Justice. I think we saw things that we hadn't seen before. We saw incredible potential finally realized. We saw a little edge to his game, and continuing those is going to be key for his development and for us changing the narrative that we were just talking about in the previous segment. If he takes that leap, all of a sudden we could say, you know what? Riley hit on those draft picks, the lottery picks that we did have. He was able to make the most of. And so I think that changes things around. You need role players to step up, guys that were acquired in the second round. But a guy like Justice that has those tools, he needs to be able to maximize what he showed us in the playoffs.
I still think Winslow can be an all-star. He's not a superstar. He's not a guy you build around. But he can be an all-star. I have no doubt. Like, I really think he could be as good as Draymond Green. And we saw in the playoffs, we're writers, David, right? We're great podcast hosts. Absolutely. And when you're starting out, it takes you a little while to find your voice, right? And I feel like Justice Winslow found his voice against the Sixers in the playoffs. He really found the sort of role that he wants to play, the kind of approach he wants to have to each and individual game and each individual possession. I really felt like Winslow turned a corner in that series. For me, he needs to work on this is cliche, but he needs to work on that three-point shot. And it got a lot better last season. Like, it looked smoother. He used to have this weird hesitation hitch when he would receive the ball in catch-and-shoot situations. He doesn't have that now. It just looks so much better compared to, even a year ago. But continue to work on that and eventually get off the bench, become a full-time starter, and preferably at small forward. And if there's a situation where you could play Josh at the two and Winslow at the three, that could be extremely disruptive defensively. And then with Josh and Justice both developing three-point shots in the NBA, could help space the floor for a guy like Goran Dragic and whoever else is driving to the basket. I think that's the eventual goal. Let's get Winslow to nail that three-point shot, become a little bit more of a floor spacer, play him at the three so he's not forced to basically playing, backup power forward or backup point guard. Let's get him in that starting lineup. And so he could really show off the rest of his game. What about Bam Adebayo? One rookie season, really promising, super agile, quick on his feet, has the ability to switch out onto the perimeter, and you know, the Heat coaching staff rave about his footwork and stuff like that. Yeah. What do you think he needs to work on during the summer?
Whereas Winslow's most benefited, I think, from his versatility, I think conversely for Bam, he needs to find something he does well. Like, at this point, he's just so raw in his unbelievable athleticism, but there's no particular strength that you can look to other than he's strong and he's explosive as a leaper. You know, he plays bigger than he actually is because of those combination of skills, but that's not enough to say that you're just an athletic big out there. You need to be able to have a go-to move, something that you can create offense with. Too often we saw him kind of look there, try to find somebody, a cutter, somebody that were going to, you know, take the ball out of his hands. He would play hot potato a lot because he just looked uncomfortable with it, especially when he was out on the elbow from about 15 feet out. I know they were running a lot of their offense through him by design, but he also looked a little uncomfortable, and he's not capable of creating his own shot right now, even though he does have, I think, in our opinion, a pretty solid handle. He just doesn't seem quite ready to take that step yet, or at least he didn't during his rookie season. I'd like to see that kind of step taken in his sophomore year. I think, you know, finding a skill that you can work on to call your own, and then from there continue to grow your game outwards.
I think that that skill should just be getting really good at dunking. You're catching lobs and dunking.
Is he a DeAndre Jordan, in your opinion?
He's like, or a Clint Capella, DeAndre Jordan, but has more. I think he's got a higher ceiling than them defensively because of how mobile he is. Like, Clint Capella has done an incredible job in the playoffs, like switching onto guys on the perimeter. I think Bam could do that, and then some. Anyway. Well, yeah. that you know, applies to everybody, I guess. But look, I think Bam, he had defensive lapses as a rookie. That's, you know, to be expected. I think get in the film room, get really good at reading and reacting, you know, defensively, and just become a lockdown defender. Just look, I think best case scenario, Miami comes out next year and they've got a bunch of guys who can handle the ball and do stuff that can play around Bam Adebayo.
Yeah.
So if Bam can just figure out how to impact the game with, you know, vertical spacing on the lob and then just being a lockdown defender next year, and maybe you know, being able to switch onto guards, and or if the Heat aren't going to play a switching system, you know, just being able to trap and show out on the perimeter, and then being able to get back in time, help on help defense, and again, just read and react quickly, be in the right position. If he could just nail that down and be a lockdown defender, he could force his way into the starting lineup, maybe, if Whiteside's not around anymore. I think that is, you talk about the one thing to get good on, just get really, really good at defense. Just get really, really good at that, and then the offense will eventually come when you get your looks.
I think he has that potential, though, to be honest with you.
I agree with you. I'm really excited to see what Bam does next year. Well, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. Send us your questions and comments by emailing us at lockedonheat@gmail.com or using the hashtag AskLOHeat, and support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.